welcome back to Franklin Covey's twice weekly podcast on Leadership with Scott Miller. We've been around for 6 years, 350 plus episodes, where twice weekly on Tuesdays and Fridays, I have the privilege of shining what is Franklin Covey's megawatt spotlight onto thought leaders around the world on topics related to making you a better leader. Franklin Covey is the most trusted leadership firm in the world, founded, of course, by Dr. Stephen R. Covey and Hiram Smith 4 decades ago, where we help organizations and individuals really achieve what matters most to them. Likely you have read The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the seminal book that our co-founder Stephen Covey wrote that has changed hundreds of millions of lives. And we use this podcast every week to make you a better leader. Perhaps it's a better solopreneur, entrepreneur. Maybe you're in the C-suite or leadership team of a large global company. Maybe you're a leader in your home, in your community, or in any facet of your life. We like to interview people that can make you more effective in whatever it is you're trying to accomplish as your legacy and your mission. Today, we have Eduardo Briceño. He is the author of this phenomenal book titled The Performance Paradox, Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. Now, often a lot of our interviews come from a referral. And sometimes they come from my weekly visit to Barnes & Noble with my 3 young sons. We have a policy, if they will read it, I will buy it. We walk out with a couple of feet of books every Saturday. They think Barnes & Noble is the library, but fine with me if they're going to read it. And I happened upon Eduardo's book at Barnes & Noble a couple of months ago and have invited him on to the podcast. With that, let's get down to business. Eduardo, welcome to On Leadership.
Thank you, Scott. It's great to be here.
Great to have you joining us from the West Coast today, where you spend a lot of your time when you're in the U.S., obviously traveling around the world. Eduardo, I'm looking forward today to talking all about what it means to be in the performance zone, what it means to be in the learning zone, a key structure of your book and your teachings. You have a TED Talk that is to say it's gone viral is an understatement. I have listened to it twice. I've read your book and studied your work. Before we get into the actual concepts in the performance paradox, rewind a couple of decades and spend some time reorienting yourself to all of our listeners and viewers around the world. Where were you born? What did you study? And how did you come to write this new book?
Sure. And thanks for the kind words, Scott. I am from Caracas, Venezuela. I thought I would live my whole life there, as everybody that I knew did. And I share something with you, Scott, I think, which is that I never guided my early life and my early career with what I thought would bring me happiness and joy. I just did what I thought I was supposed to do. I put my heads down. I worked, you know, to get good grades in school and then to try to study something that would give me a safe job, that if there was a recession, I could still have a job and provide for my family. So I studied things that I was not passionate about. I studied chemical engineering, and I studied finance, which I ended up enjoying more. But in college, I learned about this thing I had never heard about before called investment banking. It sounded amazing. I ended up doing that in Wall Street in New York City. And I thought, wow, like, I'm living in New York City. I never thought I'd be doing this. I'm being paid more than money than I ever thought I would, working in these incredible, like, multi-million dollar deals. And I thought I was living the dream. I started working with the venture capital group of the investment bank, and I was asked to join that group. So I moved to Silicon Valley 25 years ago. I was here during the dot-com boom. And again, I was, you know, in Menlo Park, you know, at the center of Silicon Valley, meeting with entrepreneurs every day, and eventually ended up joining boards of directors. And I thought that was the dream. You know, that was like what was at the peak of what would make for whatever I thought success was. And one night I was working late in the office. I was not in a good mood. I started kind of taking it out on the keyboard as I did my work, and I started feeling some pain on my hands and on my arms. And it ended up getting worse over the next few weeks. So I went to see a doctor, and it turned out to be something that was really hard to diagnose. I ended up seeing lots of doctors and trying acupuncture and meditation and all kinds of things. And I was getting worse. And I met someone who had my same condition, who couldn't use their hands for more than 10 minutes a day. And I that freaked me out because I thought, wow, what if I become unable to use my hands? It turned out to be something called myofascial pain syndrome, a repetitive strain injury. And that, and because it was really hard to diagnose, I had to do a lot of learning around what this thing might be, what led to it, how I could get better. But also I learned that I had to address the root causes of that. And that turned out to be lots of things about lifestyle, like nutrition and sleep and exercise and how I held my body. I was tensing my body every day, all day, because I wanted to perform at my best every day, all day. And that, because I was tensing my muscles all the time, it led to them getting kind of just tight and short permanently. And that prevented them from bringing kind of like blood into them so that they could recover. And so it ended up in this condition. And I realized that there were a lot of things that I had to change in my life. And one of the things that I realized I had to change was a sense of meaning, a sense of contribution, a sense of I was using my life well to make a difference in the lives of others, which I realized wasn't true. And so I was thinking, if I can't use my hands at all, will I have done something useful with my hands in the life that I have led? And so far, I felt the answer was no, because the great companies were going to be get funded, whether I was in venture capital or not. And I didn't feel like I was giving great advice to CEOs because I didn't really have any experience. I was 27 years old. So I went to grad school in search of something where I felt like I could actually make a big difference. I was interested in social entrepreneurship. So I explored a lot of different projects. And I was introduced to Stanford professor Carol Dweck. That's where I was studying. I got an MBA and a master's in education and learned about her work. She's the author of the book Mindset, The New Psychology of Success. She became my mentor. We co-founded an organization together called Mindset Works. And I led that organization for over a decade. And that led to the work that I do now, which is about helping people and organizations develop learning and cultures of learning and high performance. So did that at the beginning in education and schools. And over time, I started being asked to do more and more public speaking for businesses that wanted to foster cultures of learning and high performance. And so that's what I do now full time is I help companies build those cultures.
Let's start with a primer on this idea of growth mindset. Most people are familiar with Carol Dweck's work out of Stanford, but in her book, Mindset. But let's do a reset there. Remind everybody what it means to have a fixed mindset versus a growth mindset, and maybe give us a sense for how you've seen that applied in someone's life, maybe your own.
Sure. So a lot of people have heard of growth mindset and fixed mindset. When we ask people what a growth mindset is, we often hear things that are not quite right on. We might hear it's working hard or it's persevering or it's having high expectations. And a growth mindset is none of those things. So a growth mindset is a perspective about the nature of human beings. Specifically, is the belief that we can change, that our abilities and qualities are malleable and we can develop them over time, as opposed to being fixed. Like, for example, when we think of ourselves as geniuses because we are naturals at something. That's an example of a fixed mindset that, you know, we are great at something because of something that innate in us rather than something that we have developed. Or if we think, you know, I'm completely, you know, bad at this thing and I could never get better, that's also an example of a fixed mindset. We can have a fixed mindset about ourselves or a fixed mindset about others, like labeling other people in fixed ways, thinking they can't change. And what a fixed mindset does is it creates a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because if we believe that we can't change, then we don't believe we can improve because change is necessary for improvement. So we don't do the things necessary to improve. Same thing if we believe somebody else can't improve, then we won't share useful information with them, like honest feedback that points to an opportunity for them to improve. And so that is what a growth mindset and a fixed mindset is. It's a belief about the nature of human beings, and it is necessary but not sufficient in order to foster growth.
Eduardo, what drew you towards Carol's work around growth mindset? Was there something in your own life that you were searching for? Riff on that.
Yeah, sure. And this ties to your prior question about examples, right? Like personal examples. For me, when I read Carol's book, Mindset, I realized that I had a fixed mindset in several parts of my life, right? Like one example was in sports and athletics. I thought Some people were athletic and others were not, somewhere in the middle. And that was not something that you could change. And I saw myself as somebody who was kind of in the middle, you know, not a fantastic athlete, not a very poor athlete. But because I didn't think that I could get better really in my athleticism, every time that I played a sport, I was just trying to prove how good I was. I was trying to minimize mistakes. And if I made a mistake, I would try to hide it. And that all prevented me from getting better, right? Or, you know, in terms of social relationships, I thought some people were funny and engaging and other people were really bad at it. I was really bad at it. I would get really nervous when I would speak with anybody one-on-one. And I just wanted to be invisible so I didn't have to talk to anybody. And I didn't realize until I read Carol's book that that was just a fixed mindset about social skills. And I had never done anything to try to become better at interacting with people because I thought that that was something people either had or didn't have. And so that, those were some of the ways that I was self-sabotaging. And so because in reading the book, I realized, wow, this way of thinking is preventing me from getting better and achieving things that I care about. And then in identifying that and changing my beliefs and behaviors, I was able to become a much better athlete and to become much better at engaging and interacting with people. And now I'm a public speaker, right? And so because it has such a big impact on me, then I thought, wow, you know, everybody should learn this in school. And that's where we started in school, right? We think they're the hubs of society. And that's why we partner up and we set about to bring out her work into the world. At the time, nobody had heard of Carol Dweck or Growth Mindset. She had just released her book. And so we set out to put it out into the world.
You and I share many friends. One of them is Chip Connelly, the hospitality entrepreneur, the author, and now the organizer of sort of mission-driven retreats for people in the crescendo of life. You share a great story in your book, The Performance Paradox, about an experience you had at Chip's retreat in Mexico, involves the ocean a little bit. Will you retell that story and maybe use the lessons from that to move into what are these two zones known as the performance zone and the learning zone?
Absolutely. And Chip has become a dear mentor. I actually reached out. I didn't know him. I reached out to ask him a question. And he very generously said, hey, like, I'm happy to answer that question. How about a 20-minute call? I would love to learn more about your work. And in that conversation, he suggested that I write a book. And that's what led to the book that I wrote. Wow. And he's become a dear mentor. But one of the experiences that you're referring to is I went to the Modern Elder Academy, which is the organization that he co-founded. They have a beautiful campus in Baja, California. And I spent a week there just learning about midlife, which is what they do, and learning about how to better navigate midlife, and spending time with Chip, who was one of the co-facilitators for the week. And it was a wonderful, I mean, he's a hospitality entrepreneur. He created a great boutique hotels chain called Joie de Vivre. He was one of the advisors at Airbnb. So he has created an incredible kind of hospitality hotel in Baja California. It's beautiful, incredible food. And it's right in front of the ocean where you can see kind of like whales jumping on the water, a beautiful beach. But one thing that was really frustrating to me is that I couldn't get in the water because I grew up 45 minutes from the ocean. I love the ocean. I love swimming in the ocean. And so that was the only thing that I was frustrated by. And we were asked not to go into the water because the water was very dangerous. I didn't want to, you know, not follow the instructions from my dear mentor and his organization and get people into trouble. But we were told that about a mile away, there was a beach, a public beach, where we could go in the water and it was safe. So early one morning, I jogged there and it was amazing. It was like paradise. There was nobody there. I went in the water. I'm very comfortable in the ocean. I got past the waves. I was kind of floating and just being mindful and really present and enjoying the present moment. And next thing I know, I look around and I'm really, really far away from shore. And I said, wow, like there must be a strong current. This really is a strong ocean. So I started swimming toward shore. So my goals change from really having a great morning and enjoying to just trying to get to the shore. That was the most important thing. So I was swimming to shore, and after a minute or two, I look around and I have not made any progress. So I realized, oh wow, I must be in the middle of a rip current, which I had heard about growing up in the ocean, but I had never been in one. And that, and luckily for me, I realized, okay, this is a dangerous situation. And what I need to do is not swim toward shore. I need to swim perpendicular to shore because I need to get out of this rip current. So I turned 90 degrees. I was turning kind of, I was swimming parallel to shore. And it's a little scary because at the beginning, you continue to get pushed away from shore. And I was really far. And but after a few minutes, then I started kind of turning a little bit more toward shore and turning a little more. I was tired, so then I turned to my backstroke rather than scroll. And then eventually I started kind of feeling the waves a bit in front of me. I turned back to freestyle. I was just performing like straight to shore, trying to get there. And then I eventually let a big wave tumble me toward shore, to which felt like forever. And eventually I got up, I was dizzy, but I was safe and I had survived. And that is an illustration of the fact that sometimes when we have a goal, we drive straight toward it, and that might not be the best way to get there. Often what we need to do is to explore what might be better avenues, what might be better strategies, what might be people who might help us get to our destination, and it might not be evident or like a straight line from the beginning. And so the performance zone and the learning zone is the performance zone is when we're trying to do something as best as we know how, trying to minimize mistakes. And that's what a lot of us tend to spend all or most of our time doing, that just getting things done as best as we know how. And the paradox is that when we do that, we lower our performance. When we are stuck in chronic performance, just worried about only getting things done, we get less done than if we also engage in something else, which is leaping beyond the known. That's the learning zone. Trying things that may or may not work, making mistakes and learning from those mistakes, soliciting feedback, debriefing, reflecting. All of those things are examples of things that are different from just getting things done, and they're necessary in order to foster continuous improvement and innovation.
Eduardo, you write in your book that while the performance zone focuses on flawless execution, the learning zone is about inquiry, experimentation, and reflection, and integrating both are essential to growth. I mean, I would think that the majority of organizations aren't just focused on, but are obsessed with flawless execution. Is understanding what are the best performers do, go do that. What are our systems, our strategies, our structures? Let's get as minimal variation as possible in our workforce and have them focused on that. I'm guessing that the learning zone is probably somewhat counterintuitive to organizations that have built so much focus and discipline around flawless execution. Is that not your experience? How would you respond to that?
Yes, I find when I share these ideas with people and with leaders, it creates a lot of clarity, because there's an implicit assumption often that what we need to do to succeed is just to work hard, put our heads down, do what we know works, minimize mistakes, and that's what's going to lead us to success. And so we learn that. One of the ways we learn that is through school. You know, a lot of times everything is graded, and what we think the teacher wants is for us to get 100 in everything we do, to have no mistakes, right? Or we might look at a wonderful athlete performing, doing what they already know best, and think that that's the path to excellence, because we don't see what they do off the court. They're working on their weaknesses. They're working on the things that are at the next level of challenge, right? And so we get the idea that if you want to become a fantastic tennis player, you just spend 10,000 hours playing tennis and then you'll become great, rather than you spend 10,000 hours doing something very different than playing tennis, which is working with your coach on the things that are at the next level that you don't yet know how to do. And so when I share these ideas with leaders and professionals, I actually do live polling in my sessions, and people reflect and share their thinking. And more than 90% of people consistently say, wow, you know, we're not engaging in the learning zone as much as we want to, as much as I want us to, because people go to work trying to do their best every day, and they have the implicit understanding that the way to do that is to minimize mistakes all the time. And so we need to be deliberate, A, about how growth and improvement happens, which is something different than that. And then what are the systems and habits that we need to build as individuals, teams, and organizations in order to make that the default, the way that we work, you know, by ourselves and with each other.
Eduardo, if our listeners and viewers are at all like me, and my wife insists that no one is like me, but just go with that for a moment, I'm guessing they're digesting your work, thinking about their own career right now. They may be thinking less about their company and more about what's working for them in terms of the roles they have in life and their career. I mean, I have authored 7 books. I have taped 600 radio and podcast interviews. And right now, as I read your book, I've been thinking, okay, so my current strategy is to write 7 more books and tape 600 more episodes. And I've had to ask myself, is that working for me? Is it getting me to where I want to be? Am I in the performance zone versus in the learning zone? You know, this adage we hear, most people will say they've got 20 years of experience when they have 1 year repeated 19 times. And it's funny and pithy, but there's some truth in that. How does someone know when it's time to move from their own performance zone into the learning zone? Do these happen simultaneously? Is it a pivot back and forth? Give us some guidance on that.
Sure, I'm happy to share insights on that. I'm curious on what some of your reflections were, because it strikes me when I wrote my book, I learned a ton as I interviewed people, as I dove deeper into the research, as I had to think about illustrations, then that led me to new ways of thinking. And when I obviously, in interviewing people, you're asking questions, you're learning. So it seems to me like in your work, performance and learning is integrated, which I think is the greatest opportunity for all of us, because we spend so much time working, you know, in shifting the way we work so that we do it not only through getting things done, but with the 2 goals of getting things done while also learning and improving along the way. It seems to me like that's what you do. But before I answer your question, like, what are your reflections around, you know, when you thought about those things for yourself?
Well, I think I'm probably not a great example, because the nature of my job, like yours, is reading books and watching TED Talks and interviewing people. And so my job is by very nature a learning kind of zone job. But I've been thinking about, so is it just more of the same? I mean, what are my goals? Not confusing the success I have with some of the frustrations I've had around success measures. Am I measuring success properly? I guess what your book did for me was to ask myself, should I just like quadruple down and do more of the same and it will pop big for me? Or should I pivot significantly and say, yeah, I did that. I wrote 7 books and I hosted 3 podcasts and now that's done and I should move to something entirely different. I'm not sure I'm a great example, but your book certainly got me thinking about how much am I sort of working harder and just doubling down more versus is there a pivot in mind? Is the learning zone not learning how to do what I'm doing now better, but learning maybe something else new and better?
Great. So I would offer that for anybody, you know, for you or for your wife or anybody else, a lot of this is about being intentional. And to be intentional, we need to be clear. And so what do I mean by that? One very simple strategy that anybody can use, for example, is to remind ourselves every morning of what one area am I trying to proactively improve and how am I going about it, right? So if we build an automatic habit where we are reminding ourselves of some important things every morning, one of them is what I'm working to improve and how, then that's going to get me into learning zone habits every day where I'm going to improve at that thing. And so then you can ask questions like the ones that you're asking, like, is it that I want to get better at what I'm currently doing? And so if I am going to be, you know, an author or a podcast host, what aspect of that specifically am I going to be working to improve and how? But it can be something completely different, like you're saying. And in order to answer those types of questions, I think we need to be clear about what we care most about in our lives. What is what psychologists call our hierarchy of goals? You know, if I am a podcast host, we can ask the question, why am I a podcast host, right? Like, why is that important to me? And that'll give me an answer. And then I can ask why again, and why again, and why again. And that gets us to the highest level values and goals that we have in our lives, our pursuits. And then we can ask ourselves, how do I get better at that, at the thing that I care most about? And the answer might be becoming a better and better podcast host, or it might be something different, or it might be to add something to what you do, to your cadence and to your kind of the mix of work and personal things that you do in your life. So those are some of the things that we can kind of think about, and then think about, do we want to engage in those things on my own? Or also, do I want to build a community of people that I'm learning with and performing with in order to do those things together?
Well, I don't have answers to any of those questions, but I'll certainly be thinking about them more. When you opened, you said something I thought that was really resonant with me, and that is I have shared on my social platforms quite vulnerably that at 56 years old, I'm not quite sure what it is I want to do professionally. I'm not quite sure what it is that brings me meaning and purpose and joy and happiness. I think one of the gifts that perhaps the younger generation has, and I'm still very much, you know, not at the end of my career by any means, as my wife reminds me, because of the bills that I am responsible for. But I think the younger generation may have afforded themselves a little more deliberation around pursuing what does bring them joy, what does bring them meaning. I'm 56. I was raised in the 80s. I don't know anybody that was ever asked, what brings you joy, what brings you meaning? We went and did what it took to pay the bills. We went and pursued what our parents told us we should do. In most cases, I don't think that's the case anymore. I do think you give people a gift. You're certainly giving me a gift around some introspection on, why am I a podcast host? I'm a podcast host because I have bills to pay. And it's a talent, subjectively, that I've built and am building. I'm not going to pivot to be a dentist. I'm not going to be a federal judge. And I probably won't own a car dealership. But to your point, I'm really thinking from reading your book, what is that balance between being in the performance zone, especially when I tape, you know, 6, 8, 10 interviews a week across all three podcasts, versus being in the learning zone, and do I want to learn to be a better podcast host and author, or do I want to learn to be something better? I think it's just a question that I'm asking myself as a result of reading your book. I want to pivot, because you teach a model in your book called the growth propeller. And I'd like to take the remaining minutes of our time and talk about that. It has 5 elements. You call it the growth propeller: identity, purpose, belief, habits, and community. Would you explain first, what is the growth propeller? And maybe take a minute on each of those 5 elements.
Sure. So the growth propeller is a framework with 5 elements on things that we can think about and work on in order to become master learners and performers. And so, as you said, so picture a propeller with 3 blades. One is beliefs, one is habits, and one is community. And in the center of the propeller, the axis, we have those 2 elements of identity and purpose. So when it comes to identity, kind of, who are we evolving to be, both in how we think about ourselves, how we want others to think about us. And sometimes we are really tied to a very fixed sense of identity that prevents us from changing. And if we can't change, then we can't improve. So one thing that we can work on identity and think about is, do I think of myself as a learner? Do I think of myself as someone who's always continuing to evolve as my default, proactively? Not something. Growth and learning shouldn't be just reactive. When we make a mistake, we learn, but rather, is change the default? And how am I driving my own change? Is that part of my identity? That's the identity piece. The purpose is what gives us energy to do everything that we do, including engaging in the learning zone and the performance zone. So in terms of organizations, you know, organizations with a strong sense of purpose and mission, that they feel they're making a big difference in the world, and they foster that in their staff, that gives people an energy to collaborate and to put effort into learning and performing. And for you, you know, and for a lot of parents, right, it might be just to, like, help their kids, like, thrive. And so if for parents who are kind of working only kind of for a paycheck, that can give them a strong sense of purpose if that's providing something that's really important to them and that's going to help their kids thrive, right? But for me, eventually, my wife and I like to spend below our means. And so when I was making a lot of money in venture capital and investment banking, like at some point I had a strong sense of purpose in driving for money before that, but when that went away, I felt a void, right? So I got sick, and so I needed a different sense of purpose. That's where I connected with contributing to others and making a difference in other people's lives. So that was my path. When it comes to belief, there's lots of implicit belief that we haven't examined that lead us to behave in different ways. One example is growth mindset and fixed mindset, when we view ourselves and others as set the way they are or as able to change and grow. But another example is transparency, right? When I'm transparent with others and I share with them my beliefs and my emotions, is that something that puts me at risk? Is that something that people can use against me? So it keeps me fearful of doing that. Or do I think transparency is a good thing? Do I want to share more authentically with other people around me, especially around information that is relevant to our shared goals? And is that going to make us stronger in learning and performing? Is that going to deepen relationships rather than harm relationships if I'm honest with other people and maybe engage in difficult conversations sometimes? So those are some examples of beliefs that change the way we approach learning and performing. Then there's habits. You know, most of our behavior is driven by unconscious and automatic habits rather than by rational decision making. And so being mindful about the habits and systems that we put together to perform and to learn. Often in our lives and in our work, we have lots of habits and systems that are driven toward performance. And those are important, but we often don't have enough systems and habits that are driven for learning. And so what are those? What do they look like? How do I continue to evolve and get better at those? And finally, there's community, the people around us, whether it's our team, our organization, our family, our friends, you know, our church, whatever it is, are those people, people that I see as learners, people who want to continue to change and evolve and grow. You know, are they interested in soliciting feedback and examining mistakes and sharing with each other what they're looking to improve upon? And are we collaborating on that? And very importantly, do I feel like I trust them? Do I feel like I belong in that community? So who am I surrounding myself with, and how am I building a culture with them toward kind of collaborative learning and performing?
Never have the words, "my wife and I like to live beneath our means," come out of my mouth, but it's a concept we will be discussing this evening. Hey, let's end our discussion today, Eduardo. You wrote something that I think is really inspiring to me. And that is that our purpose and our identities are not static. They are evolving. And I don't think that's an epiphany, but I liked reading it in the book. And I want you to end our discussion today reminding everybody that our purpose is not predetermined. I mean, maybe someone thinks that because of their religion. That's fine as well. I like to think that it's not. I like cleaving to the idea that our identities, of course, change and evolve. And so do our purposes. How does that concept help to reinforce the need for a growth mindset and to find ourselves in the learning zone? Connect those two and we'll end.
Sure. Well, sometimes when we are asked to mentor younger people, for example, we might kind of suggest that they work on finding their passions or finding their purpose. And something that growth mindset research has uncovered is that that can have negative consequences because it can foster a fixed mindset about trying to find out what is the one thing that we were born to do, as opposed to developing our purpose by exploring and tinkering with things that we might find interesting, understanding that we might evolve in different ways and there are different possible ways, a lot of different ways that we could thrive in terms of evolving ourselves, in terms of evolving how we want to live, how we want to be good stewards of our life, how we want to contribute to other people. And so that is very freeing for us to think that there's not a one truth inside us to discover, but rather there's lots of possibilities, lots of choices we can make. And it is up to us to think about, how do I want to continue to evolve? And how do I want to continue to make life meaningful to me and to feel like I'm living life well? And how do I work at getting better at that? You know, not looking for flawlessness, but looking to get better at that and explore and try some things. Some things might work, some things might not work. That decreases our stress, it decreases our sense of anxiety, and increases our joy and happiness along the way. Our joy and happiness along the way, because a growth mindset doesn't just lead to higher growth and higher performance. So it's not just about the outcomes, but it's also about the journey along the way. The process is a lot more joyful because we're asking more questions, listening better, experimenting, you know, discovering more about each other, building deeper relationships. And that makes for a more joyful and fulfilling life.
Eduardo Briceño, your book is The Performance Paradox, Turning the Power of Mindset into Action. You are the CEO of Growth.How and the co-founder of Mindset Works. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here.
And we'll see you back here next week for a new conversation on leadership.